This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello and welcome to this special CIO market update from LGIM. I'm Max Julius, Head of Content, and I'm delighted to be joined by Sonia Loud, CIO, Colin Reedy, Head of Active Strategies, and Tim Drayson, Head of Economics. Well, we're devoting today's session to discussing the market and macro environment in 2022, building on our recently published CIO Outlook. So with no further ado, Sonia, even though we're barely 2 weeks into the new year, we've already seen some significant moves in markets. To what extent do they reflect the themes we've been expecting to shape the investment landscape this year, and how do you anticipate them playing out?
Thank you, Max, and a very warm welcome to today's webinar. Yes, indeed, we've had a quite a lively start to the year, and it's very much based on a lot of the themes we discussed towards the end of last year. And if we take stock, 2021 clearly was a year with very strong growth on the back of normalization, economies reopening, and let's not forget the twin stimulus arising from governments and central banks alike. That has clearly fueled risk assets, and we have seen incredibly healthy equity market returns, S&P about 25% up, the DAX about 15%, Eurostoxx 22%. So really, it's been a risk-on market environment, but very much focused on the growth and hence, obviously, the EPS that companies were able to deliver. Now, obviously, the topic of last year has been inflation, and we have debated at length at the last webinar already what inflation would mean in particular for central bank policy. And if we narrow it down from our debate that we had at the end of last year, it will be all around central banks. Because what central banks will have to look at is the opposing forces of whether inflation in fact is transitory or whether it's more structural and permanent. And that is not an easy one to decide. And obviously, we are seeing markets reacting very sensitive to what has been more hawkish Fed minutes, because it does point to the fact that obviously the latest labor market data and other data points show that clearly structural drivers probably are stickier than what we'd anticipated throughout 21. And so with that in mind, we should not forget that the outlier last year was not equity markets reacting to very strong growth. It's been the 10-year Treasury ending the year at 1.5% against, obviously, a rampant inflationary backdrop. And hence a bit of a, you know, conundrum on are investors really buying into the transitory narrative to an extent that we look through, even if it is persisting for another 1 or 2 years. And that will be the story of this year, because the starting point is very healthy equity market valuation levels. Obviously, bond yields still at very, very low levels. Spreads at compressed levels. So the margin of error has shrunk to an extent that volatility will be part of the journey throughout 2022 until we have a much clearer picture on where we are heading, and, you know, to get a much clearer picture on how central banks are assessing the situation. Because as the St. Louis Fed president has put it, it is really around, you know, risking that inflation expectations get out of control, and hence the Fed being behind the curve and trying to bring this back, or being too tight with regards to monetary policy prematurely, because it is in fact transitory, and hence they probably could have waited longer. That is the balancing act for this year, and obviously the Fed probably is closest to having to assess this properly. We have seen expectations for rate hikes increasing, and even in Europe now, obviously, we're seeing record inflation. So this is not just a US problem, but will be one clearly across the advanced economies that will be the dominant driver of this year. And on the side, because obviously against this backdrop, it seems growth is just happening. And we should not forget, we still expect above trend growth for 22. But here, clearly, we need to watch Omicron. We need to look at fiscal policy and how this might influence the growth trajectory. But clearly, the dominant factor and the driver of markets initially will be the inflation debate.
Right. So a balancing act in the face of more volatility and quite a lot of uncertainty. Well, let's turn to Tim now to drill down into some of these issues. Tim, what's your base case view for the global growth and inflation outlook?
Thank you, Max. Well, let me just start by saying we need to remain humble in our ability to forecast the path of COVID. been a massive challenge for economists the last couple of years, on top of the usual difficulties around macro forecasting. I'd say that the good news is that each successive wave seems to be having a lesser impact on GDP. So the world is starting to learn to live with the virus. Clearly, there's a combination of factors behind this, ongoing natural immunity through infection, but also the successful rollout of vaccinations globally and booster shots, etc. I think once we get through this latest wave of Omicron, and the UK perhaps is leading the way here, as Sonia mentioned, the outlook is for another year of very strong above trend growth. And perhaps by the end of the year, we could well be back at full employment globally. So that's a remarkable achievement, given the depth of the downturn in those first lockdowns. Policy is still very loose, although we're starting to talk about tightening. And for this incredible government support, particularly across developed markets, and that means strong private sector balance sheets. I also believe there's a lot of pent-up demand out there, particularly for services. We're just desperate to get out and start doing all the things we love enjoying. But now the tricky part, and Sonia has mentioned it already, inflation. I mean, it's everywhere, I mean, even in places like Europe, which hasn't seen much inflation for a decade or so. It's particularly concentrated in goods. So because of the pandemic, we had a big switch in expenditure into the goods sector as people were unable to enjoy their services. So we should get a little bit of rotation of spending away back to services as the virus fears fade. But the starting point is pretty punchy inflation. So just a few moments ago, we've had the latest CPI numbers out from the US. Core inflation rose 0.6 on the month, 5.5% year over year. Headline inflation even higher, boosted by food and energy at 7%. Now, this is the strongest rate of inflation since the early 1980s. So way above the Fed's target of kind of nearer 2%. Obviously, the pandemic's had a big impact on supply. So you've had still strong demand meeting constrained supply. That's one of the factors pushing up inflation. Those supply disruptions are taking longer to normalize than most people expected. Probably going to drag on now through the first few months of this year. I do think some improvement is likely as we go through the course of the year. So inflation is likely to come down from current levels. The question is, you know, how fast will it come down? Will it get all the way back to target? And that's where I'm less confident. I think we could end up in a situation where inflation remains stubbornly high and it runs into an economy basically at full capacity. And that could trigger further upward pressure on wages.
Right. Well, thanks for talking through those dynamics, Tim, on inflation. To what extent do you think rising prices could trigger an aggressive shift in monetary policy as suggested by the recent Fed minutes?
So this shift is underway. I think it's got further to go. We've got four Fed hikes now priced by markets. The Fed seems comfortable with that market pricing. They may well need to quicken the pace of hikes later this year and into 2023 if our view that the US economy is not really that sensitive to higher interest rates plays out, in which case they'll need to do more to slow the economy down and engineer a soft landing. The Fed could also move quite rapidly from today's tapering of quantitative easing, and that's scheduled to end mid-March, to quantitative tightening, possibly as early as the middle part of this year. They will be looking at the experience of the last cycle where they went from QE to QT, but there are some important differences this time round. So the recovery is clearly stronger. I mean, inflation is much, much higher and the labour market tighter. And then the balance sheet got even bigger this time around, given the number of assets they bought. So all those factors argue for a faster and earlier pace of balance sheet normalisation.
Right. Well, this is a really good point in which to bring Colin into the conversation. Colin, within the Active Strategies team, how are you planning on navigating this path to higher rates, and how high do you think yields can go?
Thanks, Max. In a word, I would say carefully in terms of how we're going to navigate this path to higher rates. I think I last spoke on this call just over a year ago, and I remember specifically mentioning just how many big pieces of the jigsaw were moving around in the background at that time, and almost all of them posed a significant challenge for sort of fixed income markets. Now, these issues are clearly now front and centre for most investors, and you can see the conflict in the price action we've witnessed so far this year. As I say, these were all here last year. If you told me at the start of 2021 that we would end up with core US CPI at 4.5%, Tim's just spoken about, you know, that lurching even higher with new readings, I would have expected risk-free yields to have been materially higher than they closed at the end of the year. And I think this inconsistency in the consensus was relatively straightforward to us. We may see low rates, or we may see inflation quickly return to target, but we won't see both. And if you put that another way, the market is either underestimating how high rates will need to go to bring inflation into check, or underestimating how stubborn inflation will be if we really see the policy rate remain negative in real terms over the long run. The only question is when the market is forced to face that conflict, and that's probably what's now underway and will remain one of the sort of big stories for 2022. But here's the thing for us, it might not actually be inflation per se that delivers a nasty eureka moment in bond markets. It may be as simple as realizing that as rates rise, economies actually cope. There is sufficient underlying strength. You know, if when that penny drops, things get much more interesting. That's when you need to stop talking about the path to higher rates and start discussing, you know, how high could rates actually go? You know, do central banks risk accelerating us to the end of the cycle, being overly hawkish, delivering that policy mistake that everyone thinks they will, or can yields just march higher in a fairly orderly fashion as that penny drops? I think this is probably our most sort of non-consensus view. We certainly don't do point forecasts or anything like this, but you know, we do think there is a plausible path to 4% 10-year US Treasury yields. And that may sound drastic to some, but we pushed through 3% in 2018, if you remember, and that didn't end the cycle, although it came perilously close to doing so. But the US in particular is much, much better positioned than it was then, sort of Tim has alluded to. And I think the rationale is in two parts, really. You know, firstly, history suggests behaviours actually don't change that much after societal upheaval, but there's clearly something significant going on in labour markets, you know, especially in those economies that have pivoted from sort of monetary policy to fiscal policy. Post-pandemic behaviour at the individual level here seems to be changing. People are questioning where, how, and for who they want to work for, and this is something employers haven't faced for a very long time indeed. We're sort of personally on the team watching the US participation rate like a hawk here, because the demand for labour is growing far faster than its supply, and if that continues, I just don't see how this doesn't manifest itself in broad-based wage growth. And secondly, you know, looking further out, you know, what if we're about to enter a more euphoric period coming out of the pandemic? As Tim said, you know, we're all itching to get back out there. You know, I'm clearly drawing parallels here with the roaring 20s that followed the Spanish flu. But, you know, that period brought us automobiles, films, telephones, radio, even quantum physics, I seem to remember. But, you know, we could easily be on the verge of what might roar in the 21st century, you know, given the pace of technological change, its adoption and that ongoing shift from the analog world to the digital world. You know, that it's a very long and distinguished list of possibilities: metaverse, Web3, you know, potentials for clean, cheap new energy sources. And these are the kind of trends, I think, that could break that accelerated short cycle thesis that makes investors feel that we're always just a short stone's throw, you know, from the end of the cycle, because rates just can't go up very much.
Thanks, Colin. Sonia, given Tim's comments earlier that the shift in monetary policy is very much already underway, how do you expect equities to perform going into and following Fed tightening?
Equities per se will not suffer from higher inflation, because in fact earnings are more resilient to inflation than clearly bonds. But we have probably had a taste already in 21, how the rotation looks like in the context of rising yields. Because if we recall, in the first half of 21, particularly up to March, we have seen yields rise. And that's when obviously the rotation in markets was particularly pronounced. And you have seen clearly the sell-off in technology, and the beneficiaries have been broad-based across value stocks, but in particular financials. The financial sector benefits the most from rising yields, and then across other value sectors and commodities. The expectation is that, again, and this is why I've highlighted right at the beginning, that obviously 21 has been a very strong equities year already. So the starting point for 22 would focus on what is the expectation for earnings growth. And again, despite the fact that we're expecting another year of above trend growth, we are probably beyond peak earnings growth, i.e. it's still positive, but the rate of change is decelerating rather than accelerating, whereas the story in 21 has all been around the acceleration in growth. So this is the first to point out. Point two, actually, the speed with which yields move always has a big impact then on some of the sectors. Again, have we seen everything already in the first 2 weeks, and will it continue on this trend from here? No, it will not, because there will be a lot of nuances. There will be new data points coming in. But at the end of the day, it will be the strength of the earnings cycle that dictates the way equities will react this year. But I agree very much in terms of the themes that although, yes, the value growth debate will definitely be one for this year, and we will most likely see a change in leadership. We will see rotation, maybe even more frequently. But at the end of the day, we have a number of structural drivers that will influence what is this very crude kind of stylistic debate, and that will determine even within sectors, so even within value, within growth, you will see relative winners and losers from those companies that can adjust the best and that will be able to weather the storm. And very clearly, we have to watch very carefully, as Tim has highlighted. We still are living through the latest, the Omicron wave. There will be an impact on some sectors, some businesses more than others. So it will be all eyes on the first quarter earnings season. And obviously, the US will kick off with a full year report. So there will be lots in the detail from companies and sectors telling us. But I think understanding the structural themes is key, not just for 22, but longer term, to understand how to best invest. But it's always good to understand how, you know, normal patterns like the value growth split will work through a potentially rising interest rate cycle.
Right, so all eyes on earnings and those relative winners and losers. Tim, the Bank of England is meeting again in just over 3 weeks. Do you expect another rate increase, and can tighter monetary policy really rein in inflation?
Okay, Max, so you put me on the spot here. I mean, first a confession. So I thought the Bank of England would hike in November, and they didn't. Then Omicron came along. So I thought, oh, well, they'll just wait now until 22. And they went ahead with a hike. So I'm somewhat confused by their reaction function. Having said that, I do think they will now go ahead and hike again at the February meeting. Omicron news appears to be improving, so it's not as dire as initially feared. The Bank of England will also have a new set of forecasts. And within that, I think they'll be revising up their inflation profile even further. I mean, you're right to point out that rate hikes won't do anything to get household utility bills down. These prices are determined in international markets. In fact, the rate hike will only add to the cost of living squeeze. But the reason for raising rates is the Bank of England to underline their inflation fighting credentials. They need to prevent inflation expectations from rising further and then becoming embedded in wage and price setting behaviour. And that's very much the danger that pattern could unfold in the UK. And also the housing market. Now, Colin talks about the shifting structure of the mortgage market. And it's been very, very strong. Now, those first couple of rate hikes, I don't think are going to do much to derail it, given the number of households on fixed rate mortgages. So that's another argument to get going on the hiking cycle. So yes, rate hikes will be unpopular, but it's the right thing to do for macro stability.
Right, and I don't think you're alone in being somewhat bemused by the Bank of England's reaction function. Colin, our Global Research and Engagement Groups, or GREGs, form an important part of your team's investment process. Can you give us a flavour of the key ESG risks and opportunities that they'll be digging into in 2022?
Absolutely, they very much are, Max. And from the fundamental perspective, it will be navigating, you know, these threats and opportunities that we've already discussed at the sector level. For each of them, there are 9 in total. From the ESG perspective, it will continue to be heavily climate focused. I've no doubt there's still lots of work to be done from that perspective. We will be talking to the credit rating agencies, for example, about climate integration into their ratings this year. That will be an important moment. Away from that, we still orbit around our themes like inequality, cybersecurity, health and obesity. We think are all very pertinent in today and tomorrow's world. And I also think human rights is set to accelerate up the agenda, which is obviously going to be right up there with climate in terms of investors' importance going forward. So never a shortage of areas to focus on, and these lists just continue to grow and grow, I have to say. I think this year in particular, it really will be around engagement and how we take these issues to companies and how we engage with them, and also evidence to our clients that, you know, where we're engaging, what we're doing, and the successes that we have or don't. Some companies might not agree. So I think the next stage of the ESG evolution is going to be a really, really interesting one, I have to say.
Sonia, we've covered a huge amount of ground now. Is there anything you would like to add before we wrap up today?
Yeah, maybe just trying to bring it all together, because we have indeed covered a lot of ground and covered a lot of topics. But I hope it's very clear that the level of uncertainty and the starting point. So if we combine our macroeconomic view with the market view, it's very clear that there has been a mismatch. We did call it out already, obviously, at the end of last year. But investors need to be prepared for just a further repricing and an adjustment process in order to reflect what seems to be a far stickier inflationary backdrop than originally anticipated. And it was very clear that the pricing against this backdrop is wrong. Now, as we know, and obviously as we've all tried to allude to, and Tim used the word humble, we have to accept that we do not have all the data points and the facts yet. And we need to accept that the two risks are very much at opposing ends, i.e. inflation expectations getting out of control, because indeed, you know, labor market dynamics, wage expectations are really accelerating from here. Or we are in fact moving back towards the pre-pandemic low growth, low inflation environment. That's your two scenarios, and clearly mean very, very different things to markets. And as such, I think the understanding of being nimble and tactical will be part of 22. I'm sure we will get a clearer picture throughout the year, but it's very clear that with a starting point and the very strong returns we've had in 21, we should expect definitely a far more moderate environment, and making sure understand how different asset classes will react to further monetary tightening is incredibly important for this year's investment success.
That's a great point on which to end this webinar. Thank you, Sonia, Tim and Colin, for your time today. Thank you to you, our clients, for joining us. Our next CIO call will be in February, when Sonia will be joined by Mark Benstead and Stuart Hitchcock for a podcast-only episode. In the meantime, you can find our 2022 outlook on our website, as well as an introduction to the Active Strategies team, which is also hot off the press. You can find our other updates via LGIM's social media channels, on our blog, and on our podcast channel, LGIM Talks.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating, or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous, on the Apple Podcast app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording, and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more great content, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website, LGIM.com. Copyright 2021, Legal & General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, a licensed corporation, BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.